Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Dan Aber, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by
Jeff Shannon, managing editor at Inside Lacrosse.
It was another week of great high school lacrosse results, and it panned out certainly in our Under Armour IL Top 25 rankings this week. Jeff, can we delve into that first?
Yeah, weird week this week. Not a ton of action. You get the, holiday season, Passover, Easter.
Spring break
affecting the schedules a little bit from some of the regular routine. So in our Top 25, there was no movement. We had some games played out among the top 25 going into early Wednesday morning. Is usually when our rankings come out, try to get the rankings out after the big Tuesday games, before the big Wednesday games. But in effect, there was no real big losses. Looking at the top 25, New Canaan had a couple losses to Cold Spring Harbor and McDonough to kick off their season. But again, those are teams ranked above them. It's hard to drop you when you're losing the teams that are, expected to be better. Same thing with Niskayuna. They had a tough loss to Darien. Darien's their number two team in the country. So that plays into it a little bit.
One thing I seem to be noticing about our top 25 is that I think we know who the good teams are, but I'm not exactly sure, how do they stack up to not only the teams that are their peers within their own region, but kind of also into the national picture overall. We know who the good teams are. It's just like, oh, does this team hypothetically beat this team? We'll delve into this a little bit with a few certain Long Island versus Baltimore matchups, but there's definitely a lot of parity going on in high school lacrosse right now.
Yeah, definitely some parity. To me, there's a group of teams at the top that are going to be hard to beat. I think Hill Academy is up there. Darien is up there. Landon is up there. Culver Academy is up there. They had a rough go against Haverford. It wasn't even a rough go. They just ran into a face-off matchup that was tough for them. They're up there. McDonough is up there. They ran into a Culver team that was a tough matchup. Bullis is up there for me as well. And then Avon Old Farms. And then after that, you get into it. And then there's a Pennsylvania team in there, too. I'm not quite sure if it's Haverford or LaSalle. And then Chaminade's been pretty good as well. That top 10 or so, I think they're good. After that, it gets a little hard to balance the resumes of who's lost, who's won, where the matchups are, what are your schedules. But we'll see those. That's the season. We'll see it play out a little bit. But it was interesting that they just didn't have any movement this week. I imagine with some of the results, and we'll get into some big matchups next week. But that'll start playing itself out.
And while there was there wasn't a lot of shakeup in the top 25, there was a little bit of shakeup in the regional rankings. Can you delve into those?
Yeah, we had a couple moves this week. Midwest, again, it's sort of been a weird Midwest year. They've all been beating up on each other. And we'll get into that a little bit with our guest. But Detroit Catholic Central makes a move back into the top 10 Midwest. And New Trier, who had a nice win over MICDS out of Missouri, a good program, also pops back in the top 10. Florida, in the Southeast, specifically Florida, they're in playoff mode these days. You had a nice upset win in a district regional championship, Benjamin School, with an 8-7 comeback victory over Jupiter. Jupiter had been on a top 10 down there. Benjamin now gets the benefit of that victory and a good record to move into the top 10. So a couple little movements there. We'll see some solidification in the next couple of weeks with the Southeast. East, Florida, Texas start getting into their championship mode. We'll see Georgia making that move soon as well.
So that's
usually the first region to start solidifying itself. So we'll see some movement there.
All right, let's start delving into some games. And the first one we're going to talk about was a big result from Wednesday evening. St. Anthony's 12, Boys Latin 9. A lot of people had pegged Boys Latin favorites in this game, so this is a little bit of an upset for St. Anthony's.
It was a weird... So coming into this game, I'd watched the Chaminade St. Anthony's game on stream, and that was... Watching that, you would have thought St. Anthony's didn't really belong in the top 25. It was a real big Chaminade shellacking in that. I think the final score was 12-6, but it was really Chaminade like 12-3 with a couple late goals going into that one. So, but to St. Anthony's credit, they've refocused a little bit after that loss and come into Baltimore and have a great game against a boys' Latin team that has been a game for pretty much everyone. I mean, they played Hill Academy to one goal, a couple other teams. But key for St. Anthony's was Brendan O'Neill, one of the top recruits in, I believe that's the 2020 class.
Freshman class.
Yeah, freshman class. It gets so crazy with that. He had four goals. Huge kid, great hands, lefty, just sweeps around from GLE to topside and just buries it like few others I've ever seen at his level. And he was a real difference maker for them in that contest against the Boys Latin team that was just struggling to kind of defend him. Boys Latin was missing a couple of their big defenders. I know one of their close guys and Ubiraco were both out of the game. So when you don't have a veteran matchup or a talent matchup to go against O'Neill, he's going to get you every time. A couple of the guys had good games. Jack Hawley, one goal, two assists. Terrence Mooney, a pen commit, two goals. And Thomas Linger had a really good game. He started out with a couple, basically steals against Boys Latin's offense. He is headed to UMBC and talking to some friends out there. I mean, he could be a guy that could be a four-year starter at a school like that. So that's some nice play there. I mean, Boys Latin these days, it's about the Brandall brothers and Luke Schilling, and it's kind of the core of their offense and defense. But again, I just thought St. Anthony's had a better game. They're more focused, a little bit more physical in certain aspects. And with Boys Latin missing a couple pieces, they just couldn't hang with them for the full four quarters.
Yeah, Ubriaco and their faceoff specialist, Jake Glatz, both didn't play, right?
Yes. Yeah, that was sort of the matchup there. But Boys Latin had a young freshman faceoff commitment going to Maryland, whose name escapes me. But he had a decent game. But again, without that wing play, without having Ubriaco to slough down on defense and take up a matchup, you're just going to miss out on some good defense there. And good win for St. Anthony's. Gets them, sort of solidifies their spot in the top 25, I think. And Boys Latin are going to figure out where they start falling, especially with MIAA play coming up.
Absolutely. The next game we're going to go into is LaSalle College 12, Conestoga 5. Big Philly matchup goes in favor of LaSalle.
Yeah, this was a matchup within our Mid-Atlantic ratings, two ranked teams. Conestoga has had a great start. They had seven wins under their belt going into that contest. But LaSalle, it's hard to get past them. I mean, Brent Baskin, if I remember correctly, had at least 5 or 6 points in this contest. They have some nice matchup components there, and they took them. And it's sort of interesting. I'm not quite sure who the class of Philly is right now.
Yeah.
Haverford has played a stronger schedule. They struggled the first couple games, but they really found themselves after that St. Paul's contest and have won every game since. LaSalle has, a good amount of talent, good goalie play. I'm intrigued. Looking at the schedules, I don't think those two teams match up either, which is unfortunate this season. But that's sort of like the question in my brain right now. Who's the better team out of Philly? Is it LaSalle or is it Haverford? And LaSalle gets a nice big win over a Conestoga team that had been rolling, so they are definitely making their case for themselves, both in the region and in our top 25.
Yeah, one player I want to spotlight for this game for LaSalle was Anthony Giuliani, who had a fantastic day at the Faceoff X, I believe 12 of 14 on draws. But you're very right. I think LaSalle and Haverford are the class of Philly, but who's better than the other? I think that is a question that the remaining weeks will have to answer.
One other matchup I wanted to eyeball quickly. This is coming from Wednesday night. Our top 25 team, Torrey Pines, had a rough game in Colorado, losing 15-4 to Cherry Creek. I haven't seen the full reports on this one, but it sounded like Cherry Creek just got the jump on them early and then rode that to victory in this contest. That will probably open up a spot in the top 25 next week with Torrey Pines. I think they played a great strength schedule, but they're going to have to win some. They got to win some of that strength of schedule, and two losses in the last three games will open up a spot for somebody else in the national level. I got to think so. That's another big matchup among the top 25 scores to keep a watch.
Before we move on to a few other topics, we're going to bring on a guest Jeff, who are we bringing on to the show?
Today we're talking to John Tallman. John is a reporter out of the Midwest. He runs at Ohio Boys Lax. Full title is the Ohio Boys Lax Report. He also has ohioboyslax.wordpress.com, where you can follow what's going on in the region. And he is also one of our Under Armour Inside Lacrosse Midwest voters, so we rely on him for his thoughts and opinions coming out of that region. Here we are talking to John. Wanted to get into talking and looking a little bit about the Midwest so far this year. I know it's kind of a little bit early in the competition, but there's been some big regional, interregional games. From your thought, looking at the early part of the season, what's been the theme so far, or kind of, you know, the connectivity of the Midwest lacrosse this season?
Honestly, like every year I watch the Midwest hoping for something new. And it seems like this year it's pretty much the same as the past years. Culver's sort of the class of the Midwest, and then everyone else is fighting for 2 through 10, as far as like the ratings are concerned. You know, there's a couple of surprises here and there, like, you know, Cathedral and Indiana sort of, you know, even though they were state champions last year, you know, they lost a couple games. So I guess, you know, people kind of write them off, and then they rattle off, you know, 4 or 5 games in a row, including a win over Brother Rice. And now they're pretty much at the, you know, top 2 or 3 in the rankings.
We've been following those games. Those were kind of interesting. But with the historic front runners, what are you seeing out of these guys this year in the Upper Arlington's and Culver's and whatnot?
People, I think, at the beginning of the season, because, you know, Ted Wolford from Upper Arlington retired over the summer. And by retired, I mean he just stopped being the head coach. He's still on the sidelines. And so I think people kind of dropped their expectations for Upper Arlington a little bit. And, you know, it's basically, you know, the same system, that the same kids buying into, you know, the same philosophy. So they're basically back where they should be, sort of near the top. Not quite Culver, though. I mean, you don't often get, especially Midwest teams, going to the East Coast and just running through pretty much everyone.
And what does a state section title mean for Ohio this year?
It's a big deal in the sense that now a lot of the athletic directors who were hesitant to field a team or start sponsoring a team now see it as a legitimate option in the springtime. You know, it's a big deal to the already established teams, because it's, you know, sort of an additional form of recognition. So it, frankly, it helps the growth tremendously. We've already had, I think, probably like 10 or 11 new teams jump in this year, and it looks like there's going to be a bunch more next year as well.
John, what are, or who are some of the players that fans should keep an eye on out of the Midwest? Who are some of the guys that, if you're looking at a national scheme or you're an NCAA fan, some players that we should keep an eye on?
Okay. I'm going to exclude a lot of the Culver guys. I'm assuming a lot of people have heard about them already. I know Jack Kelly at Brother Rice. I believe he's headed to Georgetown. He's a name I see in game recaps a lot. You know, he's good for 3 or 4 goals a game. There is, I believe, Johnny Wiseman from Olentangy Liberty. He's headed to Ohio State. I actually, about 10 minutes ago, I was watching, I think it was Committed Combine's Twitter feed, has a really nice video of his rocker step from a couple nights ago, that I went, oh, yeah, now we know why Ohio State wants him. I'm trying to think of some other kids. There's a university school in Cleveland has a young man, Tommy Nook, who's headed to BU, who, you know, he's a tremendous, I think he's been not necessarily under the radar, but he gets overlooked in the discussion. I'm trying to think of some other kids that, Mikey Beam from St. Ignatius. I watched them against Everest the other day, and he had a tremendous game. He kept them in that pretty much all the way to the end.
John, are there any surprise teams that we should keep an eye on this year? Any teams that might make it to the semifinals in Ohio or Michigan or anything like that that would be a bit of a surprise on the national level?
Yeah, I'm sure that, well, you know, the way Ohio broke out their district, there's some Columbus teams who are basically playing in the Toledo division. So it may not necessarily be a surprise. Maybe like a Dublin Kaufman. They have a chance to push Upper Arlington in the, probably in the, for the district championship. They're in with Dublin Jerome and Upper Arlington, but Kaufman recently beat Dublin Jerome, so that may be the step they need to make to give Upper Arlington all they can handle. Overall, I've been watching New Trier in Illinois. They're one of those teams I kind of like. I keep on the radar, and you know they. They're in the the new Midwest Lacrosse Conference, and they beat, I believe, Detroit. They beat MICDS over the weekend, and that sort of gave me the impetus to push them into my Midwest top 10.
Yeah, I noticed that win, too, and it kind of helped them get into the rankings this week. John, thanks very much for taking a couple of minutes to talk a little bit about the Midwest, and looking forward to your thoughts and opinions. If people want to find you, where can they find you at?
At Ohio Boys Lax on Twitter, and then Ohio Boys Lax on WordPress, I guess.
Awesome. Yeah, and John, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Before we delve into the rest of our topics, we got to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap. Jeff, tell us about Sideline Swap.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's SidelineSwap.com.
Jeff, one thing we got to talk about is this thing that's been lingering over not only the high school season but also the NCAA season, and that is the ensuing recruiting legislation that is bound to have a serious impact on the sport. Let's get into it.
Yeah, it's coming down to a vote in the next we're recording this on a Thursday. It's Thursday, Friday period. Our last issue of Inside Lacrosse, and I beg anybody that cares about this issue to pick it up. Terry Foy did a great job asking opinions of a Division I coaches, delving into the subject with people who were spearheading the initiatives. The goal that the IMLCA and IWLCA have is to move the recruiting period to a non-contact period between basically your freshman and sophomore year of high school. Communication would then start September 1st of your junior year of high school. So going into that fall of your junior year would be when the communication would line up again, which kind of, when I started covering the stuff, you know, 8-10 years ago, that was the normal period at that point. That's kind of where it had been pushed to. Since then, of course, it's gone to a period where eighth graders have given verbal commitments to to teams. There are pros and cons to this, in my opinion, and I shared a little bit of that in my column in the last issue. I actually, just coming from a straight editorial perspective, I like the move. I like not having to care about eighth graders and freshmen and sophomores as a writer. I mean, they're still, we would still care a little bit, just in the same way that I think Division I coaches would care. No Division I coach is going to not try to build a resume on a class and come into that September 1st date empty-handed. They are going to have that information, and we'll be also looking at that information. But I don't think the commitment aspect I won't need to care about the commitment aspect of it, which is nice. I would rather that September 1st be a big blowout day. If the commitments start coming in, that's cool. That'll be interesting. But it also gives an opportunity for kids to say, okay, I got 30 commitment opportunities from 30 different schools. Now I'm going to take my tours. So you kind of report on the tours. That's interesting. I think the aspect that'll be hardest for people to understand and for families to get the part that I'll be interested in is right now communication. There's mostly direct communication between parents and coaches. There's a period of, I forget when exactly it is, but you can't do direct communication, but communication is really open between parents and programs, and you can figure out this is your child, you want to be able to help him find the best opportunity, and you can spearhead that effort. Now, with this legislation, if it does go through, that won't be as easy. You'll find that third-party groups will be your best avenue to gauging who has interest in you, who doesn't, where you lie athletically, NCAA recruiting-wise. That's the big interesting question that I have moving forward. And it kind of, again, it's a little bit of retro moving. That's why coaches like it a little bit. I would rather, instead of talking to 30 parents, talk to one coach or half a dozen coaches who I have really good relationships with and get a sense of who they think are good kids coming up, and then start the recruiting process when the kid's more mature, when you have an opportunity. I like all that. It's weird to take it out of the parents' hands early, though. And I think Terry, and I'm sure he'll get into this a little bit more when it does happen, one of our ensuing podcasts, but I am intrigued to see which way this goes with the NCAA group when they make a vote.
Yeah, this is we may have underplayed it a little bit, but it does kind of feel like a huge watershed moment is coming with this vote. It could play out that way. It could not play out that way.
Yeah, again, I don't want to oversell it. I think that's part of it from talking with our reportage. The optimism for it passing is kind of a
50-50.
Yeah, different depending on who you talk to. So I don't want to oversell it either. But it could change a lot. And I mean, for a lot of ways, I think it'll be beneficial. It's just a way to take it out of direct communication. It'll, you know, like anything, if it does happen, it'll create new market opportunities.
Yeah.
And people will take advantage of those market opportunities. If it doesn't, then it's the same market we got here, and everyone just has to get used to it.
Yeah, I think the hallmark of your column was we shall see, right?
Yeah, we shall see. We will. It's like anything. You make a move, and, you know, there will be repercussions to that move, and everyone thinks, oh, this will make a positive move. Well, we'll see.
we
shall see. Again, for me, to the point where I ignore it on a certain level, I don't really care if an eighth grader commits. Like, if it's the first kid in the class, well, that sets the tone. But if it's the 30 kid in a freshman class, I don't care. I'm intrigued to see where your commitment lies by the time you're a junior. Like, I'm not. And to make that the news, and to give that some cachet, I would like to see a return to that.
Absolutely. If you're looking for more tangible things to watch, we've got plenty of good games to come to watch. Coming up in the next few days, we've got Darien versus Manhasset Saturday. That'll be on varsity12news.com. That's a very high-powered matchup. Darien, a great defensive team with Arden Cohen, now on that team, one of the top defenders in the 2017 class, going against a very potent Manhasset team. Lots of Division I commits on both these teams.
Yeah, that's a popular matchup. I know it's a traditional game for these two programs, and it really does help set some national rankings indicators. A lot of good talent across the board. You mentioned Cohen. They have a great goalie at their end as well. Manhasset has really good offensive players. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to watch this one either live or catch it on the ensuing stream later in the work week. One other thing to watch what to watch this coming week. St. Ignatius Prep, our top 25 team from California, is making their annual tour to the East Coast. They have a big game against Landon. I believe that's on Tuesday, April 18th, down in the D.C. area. And then they make their way up to Long Island for matchups against Garden City and Chaminade. Again, a lot of good NCAA talent across the board in that run. I think lastly, Tuesday, and Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but Tuesday, the MIAA season kicks off as well.
I believe it does, and that'll be a gauntlet, because I think we've talked about this, that there doesn't really seem to be one team in the MIAA that is pulling away. If we had to say that about one team, I think we might say it about McDonough at this point. I think they've put up a considerable body of work where they're playing teams physically, they're very athletic, and they're just scoring a lot of goals on them.
Yeah, and then after that, it's a hodgepodge. So that's always fun to kind of kick that season off on Tuesday. It's a big ride of spring here in the Mid-Atlantic.
Well, that's all we have to talk about for this week. We thank you guys for listening to the IL Preps podcast. If you like it, please tell a friend, please subscribe, or give us feedback. Once again, I'm Dan Abern. You can follow me on Twitter at DanAbern2423.
And Jeff Shannon, you can follow all the high school news and notes at IL Preps.
Enjoy all the high school games, everybody.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.